I talked to a fellow yesterday. He said he eats 12 at a time.
Oh my gosh!
I used to do that.
Are you serious?
Serious.
12?
Yeah.
What? You
What's
ate
wrong?
12 White Castles?
Yeah, it was about the same as 2 quarter pounders with cheese, okay?
Oh,
God. That was back in my eating days. I still eat, but not that way. Oh, I didn't think I could eat that way. Anyway. All right. We are on page... Oh, let me get towards the end of things, when we have a couple of minutes left, when everybody's here, who's going to be here, I just want to take a quick head count, because I'm going to order books this week for the next book, which was called The Book of Knowing and Worth. And I'm probably going to be making an announcement when we are close to being finished with this, make an announcement from the platform that we're going to be starting a new book, and you can let anybody else know this too, that anybody's invited to come here anytime. You don't have to have a book, you don't have to read a book. You want to bask in the energy, you want to take some stuff in, feel free to do that. No, there's no commitment. Where will I be in the practice of this work? Where will it take me? Page 353. Does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay. Sometimes my marker gets moved around by me. I mean, nobody's sneaking in and moving my marker around. Or maybe they are, I don't know. Okay. Where will I be in the practice of this work? Where will it take me? You'll notice that many of these are what we might call intellectual questions. They're things that the mind is asking. And the mind is usually asking questions because it wants to be safe. Okay? I want to guarantee results. Or the other one that came to me, I was going to bring this with me, and I totally forgot about it because I got wrapped up in whatever I was taking with me. I was going to bring my copy of The Velveteen Rabbit with me because it seems so appropriate for these questions that are coming up. And if you're not familiar with it, I'll bring it in next week if I remember. But essentially, the last line in the description is the little Velveteen Rabbit who is asking all of these questions about what does it mean to become real, finally says in the end, he wishes he could become real without these painful things happening to him. In other words, I want to become real, but I don't want to change anything. Or as Sheldon Kopp said in If You Meet the Buddha on the Road, Kill Him, he's a psychiatrist from Washington, D.C., said, you know, most of my patients don't want to get well. They want to be more successful neurotics. In other words, they just want to keep doing what they're doing. They want me to take the pain away. And you see, you know, it just doesn't work that way. And again, interestingly enough, most if not all of the pain that he is referring to, he didn't refer to this in his book, I don't believe, but most of the pain that he's referring to is the pain of being attached to something. And interestingly enough, when I'm attached to safety or being safe, I can't move. And that's why the Course and other forms of literature will talk about that as being an illusion. Because holding on to safety doesn't really make me safe, it just makes me more frightened. Okay. And after a while, it doesn't even carry the illusion of safety with it anymore, right? But I'm so used to doing it, I'm so used to grasping for that. I'm a rock, I'm an island. And a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries. Yeah, right. Where this work will take you is where you are required to go. You notice they never answer questions in a linear way. If you're looking for an intellectual answer, you're not going to get one. For you, for your own soul's choices to be recognized and met by you in congruence with your own divine knowing. Not everybody ends up in the same place. Everybody goes where their soul's journeys require them. How do I know my soul's journey? Because I am on it. If you're here, you're on it. If you're aware of it in any way, shape, or form, you're on it. You're doing what one of my teachers calls, you're doing your being. I am attuned to its frequency, and I am unknowing. Do you understand this? In 12-step recovery, they talk about doing the next right thing. That is so perfect for any one of us who is on a spiritual path. What's the next right thing? Is I'll go to class on Sunday morning, and I will sit there and I will absorb or take in whatever it is that I can. It's the next right thing for me. It's being present in that moment. It's not like saying, okay, well, I got the next right thing. Now what's the next right thing after the next right thing? That's what my mind does. Not that your mind would do that, but my mind will do that. All right. And I say, okay, just calm down. Let's be in the next right thing for the moment until that next right thing is done, till it's cooked, till it's 11 o'clock, or till it's 10 to 11. And then we'll say, what's the next right thing? Maybe the next right thing is having a cup of coffee. Do you ever think about that? Maybe the next right thing is holding a door for somebody. Doesn't have to be complicated, doesn't have to be big, doesn't have to be outrageous. Okay? It could be really, really simple. But it's always going to be a choice of being an act of love, something that opens your heart, or something that closes your heart. That's simple. Okay. The groups that are working together on this plane to shift energy have made arrangements to work this way. In other words, we've all kind of been in agreement, we'll come here on Sunday morning. So here we are. Individuals who are on their path, that are on their own adventures, are carried to where they are needed to be in order to do this work in the way that is most appropriate for them. You each have gifts and expect that they will be used. Nothing you have been gifted with will be wasted or ignored. Your gifts come to you as you require them. So it's not like hoarding, he who has the most gifts wins at the end of the day, right? The gifts will not just come to you, you will become aware of the gifts you need when you need them. So it's like I was doing a workshop last week at a retreat, and people were taking notes, copiously taking notes on things, and that was okay. Right? But what I wanted to get across is whatever information you absorb here for yourself, it will be available to you when you need it. Can you trust that? Can you trust that you don't need a notebook? You don't have to carry it around in your wallet. You know what I did? The first book that I read of Paul's, I Am the Word, I was so impressed with that I started making copies of pages and cutting out little sections. And so I had this little book that I carried around with me with all of these little pieces glued in there in case I needed them. You know how often I went to that book? Zero. None. Because I not only did that, but then I did another one, right, with the next two books. You know, that's still gathering dust on my shelf someplace. I mean, it's wonderful, right? But what you need will be available to you when you need it. Can you trust that? I mean, hasn't that always happened already? How many times have we gone back to the notes we took on a retreat 3 years ago? Which was so friggin' important. I gotta remember this. guess what? You already do remember it. It's already part of your being. If it struck you as being so essentially important, you vibrated with that energy, that vibration, that tuning fork is still there. Nothing you have been gifted with will be wasted or ignored. Your gifts come to you as you require them. Would that I could trust that. So if you find out in a year that you need to move someplace because that is where your heart is taking you, you will trust that your work will be made known to you. So you are the embodiment of this frequency, and how you work with it will be in your knowing. Can we say this one together? I am not fearful of the choices before me. I am trusting completely that I am in my worth and that I am standing in my knowing as a divine being. I am word through this knowing. I am word through this intention. Word, I am word. Share with you a little personal story. By the way, I'm always open to questions. If you have questions you need to ask me personally, most of the time I'll answer them. A number of years ago, and actually beginning in 1961, when I graduated from high school, I made a commitment to God, to the universe, to whoever was in charge, right? That I committed myself to the life of a Severian brother, Roman Catholic religious order that primarily teaches school, or used to just teach school. Now they've branched out in a number of other areas, doing a lot of really good missionary work, especially in Haiti and Africa right now. And I committed my life to that. That was a lifelong commitment for me. I wasn't trying to get out of the war. In fact, I didn't even think about that. And I remained faithful to that commitment for 27 years. Doing a lot of stuff in between. Taught school for 11 years. Worked as an alcoholism and drug counselor therapist for about 10 more years. Mostly in the Louisville area. Spent a couple of years in Columbus, Indiana, where I was working in a treatment center up there. And then spent a year in South Dakota on an Indian reservation. I call it my desert experience, which it was. And during that experience, I came to a point where I realized that this lifelong commitment that I had made was over. It's done. I had an image of myself in the last couple of years of that commitment, trying to resuscitate a dead body. I didn't realize that's what I was doing, but it became conscious to me that I was doing all of these extra things, joining this committee and joining that committee and doing this and doing that, of trying to resuscitate something that wasn't there anymore. And so I came to the conclusion, listening to my heart, not my head, listening to my heart and saying, you know, this, it doesn't negate the commitment that you made, but you know, all of the work that you did this past 27 years, but your commitment to that particular lifestyle is done. There's no more energy there for you. You can still choose to do it if you want to, but it will be resuscitating a dead body. But that's still your choice if you want it to be so. And I realized it was done. It was cooked. I was extremely grateful for it, thankful for it, but it was not there anymore. And so when we speak of change here sometimes, it might be a job, it might be another kind of commitment. Sometimes we realize that to sometimes our own chagrin, you know, that something is done. And I'm not trying to read anybody else's mind. That's just a piece of my, a little piece of my story, is coming to a realization that something was done that I thought was never going to be done. And of course, that left me in a very precarious position of, okay, God, what the hell do I do now? I had my whole life mapped in front of me. What do I do now? Well, you know the rest of the story, okay? Somebody was else was part of the picture. What will happen to me when I change? Maybe nothing in the external form. Maybe the way you look, maybe what you are doing, maybe how you are doing it will be exactly the same. I know after I left the brothers and got married to Margot, the work that I was doing was practically exactly the same work I was doing before. You know, my connection with other people and the work that I was doing, the therapy work that I was doing, was not any different than what I had been doing before. The form itself, or the activity involved in that form, was not any different from what I was doing before. I was very different where I was standing, but the work itself was not terribly different. What will happen to me when I change? Well, that is a good question. You have been changing your whole life. I'm attached to my new car because it smells like a new car, looks like a new car, acts like a new car. Guess what? 5 minutes from now, it's not a new car anymore. But you know what? I'm still attached to my new car. That's why they call it an illusion. Because it's not. I'm attached to something that's not there anymore. Okay? Did you ever do that?
Yes.
I'm attached to something. And that's true for any attachment. My attachment to that thing or that relationship or that person or that place or whatever it might happen to be is an attachment to something that's not there anymore. I'm attached to my 21-year-old body. Well, good luck. You can stay attached to that as long as you want to, okay? It just ain't here anymore. You can pretend it is. You have been changing your whole life. You should be used to it by now, okay? Everything that is made up of matter is constantly changing, is never the same. That's why illusion is an attachment, because what I was attached to a moment ago no longer exists the way it existed a moment ago. But what we have taught you here is about frequency, is about love, is about creation and manifestation. So let's say a frequency, just considering a frequency, a velocity, a wave of sound, for instance. That's not going to change. If I have a tuning fork in the key of E, that is continually going to vibrate in that particular note. That vibration is going to remain the same. It's not a material object, so it can be measured materially, but it's not a material object. So if I am resonating with love, not with my understanding of love, not what I think love is, not my definition of love, but I am radiating, I am vibrating at this frequency of lovingness. That's my I am-ness. Now, in our humanness, that can also increase. If you want to use the same analogy of sound, it can become louder. It can become clearer. But the vibration itself will remain loving, always. When I love, I know what that means. I know what it means to open my heart. I know what it means to close my heart. Bless you. So you, who you become is the person who can work with these new ideals and can learn to work with the choices that they call to them. You are who you are on a deeper level, and you are expressing yourself in a new way through the recognition of the abilities that you have. Your opportunities will be gifted to you as you move forward. Just keep that really, really simple. Just what it said before. What you need will be provided for you. And rather than think about changing so much, realize that we are all in the energy of transformation, which on some level might be looked upon as being change, but really is using energy now in a different kind of way. The analogy I came across a while ago is that, I think I might have mentioned this because it was a part of a talk I gave a couple of weeks ago, but it strikes me as being rather poignant here in terms of transformation, is that whenever I'm angry about something, I mean, not that that would happen to you, but whenever I'm angry about something or someone or some situation, there is usually always something that I love that is either being discounted or being threatened. And so if I stop for a minute and instead of feeding my anger, realize what it is that I love and tap into that vibration, I am literally transforming the situation that I hate or can't stand or I'm angry at, and literally transforming my connection with those people, places, and things that I am involved with. I can flip that thing over from anger to love because they both exist in the same place. It's just an expression of the same energy. And I can choose how that energy is expressed. I can express it lovingly or I can express it in a different way. So in the couple of for instances about that, Viktor Frankl, who was in a concentration camp in Germany, Eddie Nettleman, who was also in a concentration camp, Anne Frank. All of them wrote about how, and in different ways, about how to be able to transform this energy of hatred or prejudice or anger or fear into that of love. That's what they did. And it was an expansive kind of loving that kept expanding, rather than that cold, cruel kind of hatred, anger, fear that just sort of closes us up in our own little iceberg. It's amazing. Now, the requirements of the time for everyone is to be in amplification of frequency, which means that you must become what you say you are in vibration. How did Gandhi put it?
Yeah. Change.
Be the change you want. Yeah, I am my. If you want to know what my work is, here it's standing right here in front of you. This is my message. My message is: I'm a little brown man with a walking stick, right, dressed in rags. Okay, and I'm walking to the sea to gather salt for my people. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing my being. You must become what you say you are in vibration. Now, try not to be confused about that, because when you say what I, you already are this, you already are love, you already are the source of love, you already are connected to the source of love. There isn't anything you have to do to get there. It's already here. But it's claiming that as being your truth. Not getting lost in our perception of things. Oh, the world is so screwed up. Or is this or that, or oh my God, look what happened now. What's next? I'm not denying those things, but I am saying all of those are your and my perception, our limited point of view of what is going on and what is happening. And the only thing usually that can happen with my perception or change is that I have to erase all of this. I have to get rid of all of this and kind of start all over again. And this is saying, no, that doesn't have to happen that way, that you already have the transformational power of love within you. You can tap into that, you can vibrate with that. I could see peace instead of this. That's just another way of saying the same thing. If you don't like what you chose, choose differently, choose once again. It's saying the same thing. As you work with this consciously, you call to you others who would be resonating in similar frequency. These are your fellow journeyers, and we recognize each other through our light. Grant. So we say to you each, it will be to your benefit through these times of change to join energies with those who are like-minded, those who are on a conscious path, those who are realigning themselves to the new paradigm of consciousness that is here now, operating well and emerging gradually as the new name, I Am Word. I am an aspect of the Creator in whatever language you wish to give it. That's one of the things that is so refreshing and rejuvenating and enlightening of being here together on Sunday mornings. Is, you know, even if you don't read anything out of the book, if you don't remember anything consciously that might have happened, is when we are here together in some way, in a kind of a rather strange way of supporting one another in our truth. Not saying you have to go this way, because each one of us is going to be expressing that or doing that perhaps on a different level or a different way. All right. But saying, I know who you are. Isn't that cool? I know who you are. And you know who I am. I even know you in your forgetfulness, just like you know me in my forgetfulness. Wow. What a trip. Those of you, those who are on the journey and aware of it, have much to teach each other. Sharing the information of your own development spiritually can only enhance your own knowing. As you get the affirmation from your brother that he or she is having similar knowing, similar experience, similar concerns about the obstacles on the path, you can begin to work together to support one another in transference and in choice. We would recognize you by your light. You will recognize your brothers through the same means. I am now choosing to recognize the fellow travelers who I will be working with, and I will be brought to them in divine order, as is required for my highest good. I am Word through this intention. Word, I am Word. One word of caution about that. This is not about making a judgment. We're not separating the sheep from the goats. Okay? Saying, oh, there's some, I can see the light in them. They must be on the path, but that turd over there isn't. Okay. One of the things this did, one of the exercises it gave, I think it was in this book, but it might have been in one of the other ones that I've been reading, was imagine that everybody you see is already enlightened. Imagine everybody you see already knows the truth of who they are. They might not be acting it out right now. They might or might not be aware of it right now, but they are already in the light. And so this is not about seeking somebody who, you know, oh, I feel so comfortable with them, so I must be okay. Right? Now, when that happens, that's fine. That's wonderful. That's one of the things that happens here, is, you know, we get together with like-minded people. And I think that, you know, you don't have to wave a flag here. You just come walking in and go, ah, well, again, this is another reflection on 12-step recovery. We say this a lot. Somebody walks into an AA meeting. I said, we already know 98% about you already. We might not know your name, all right? We might not know your total history, but you walk in here with a sense of belonging, right? We already know a huge portion about what you are and how you are and how you are expressing yourself and what's going on in your life without anybody saying a word. Same thing happens here. But the same thing happens in Kroger's. Or in a parking lot, or upstairs, or Big Lots, or Walmart.
Never.
Imagine everybody you meet in Walmart is an enlightened being. Because who are you to say they're not? See, that's just my personality self reacting to their personality self. And there's no truth in that at all. That's really the illusion. Well, I'm enlightened, are you? See, as soon as I say that, I become attached to something that's not there anymore. It's not meant to be tricky. It's meant to be challenging, because it is. And the challenge only is this, not that it's a mountain, another mountain to climb. The challenge is simply letting go of all of these preconceived notions, bumper stickers that we have either stuck on ourselves or stuck on somebody else, and saying, that is not the truth of who they are. I know the truth of who they are. I might get lost in illusion occasionally. And I'm not going to condemn myself or anybody else for that. But I know the truth of who you are.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Yesterday I spent a couple of hours ringing the Salvation Army bell. If you've never done that, that is a wonderful exercise in seeing your own judgments and moving past them. Because everyone who comes into the Kroger's, you're saying, okay, this person's going to give, or this person's not going to give, or whatever the case may be. And constantly, I'm surprised. Until at one point in time, you're no longer judging people as they come in. You're just accepting them, whether they give or not, and just, you know, that smile and that Merry Christmas, or whatever the case may be. But it does make you recognize how constantly you're going through and you're judging, and you don't have to. You don't have to. You can recognize people for wherever they are, doing whatever it is that they're doing.
Beautiful.
That reminds me of the first time in 1967 when I put out my first little play-along LP and booklet on jazz, and a prisoner down in Tennessee wrote, so he didn't have any money, didn't have a family, what I send him one. And my first thought was, I wonder what he did to be in there. And why should I give him something? Well, I thought about it, and I gave it to him, and I've been given ever since. But it's interesting how, unless they tell me why they're in there, I've never asked anybody, I don't think, why they're in there. And that's a whole bunch of prisoners. It's interesting how you just, what you thought disappears, and there's a need, and you decide whether to give it to them or not. Or whatever they ask to do.
Mm-hmm. That's feeding back.
I remember listening to Leo Biscaglia years ago. Remember Leo, the love doctor?
Yeah. Okay.
he was talking about walking along the street one time, and there was a drunk lying on the sidewalk, and he picked him up. And he said, "You just first of all, you just saw everybody walking past this guy." And he at least he wasn't going to take him home to his apartment. Okay, he was just going to at least prop him up against the wall because he was just lying on the sidewalk. And he picked him up and he said, "Somebody, please help me. I know he's drunk. I know he stinks. All right, but he's a human being. Doesn't he have the right to be a little bit more comfortable in, you know, lying on top of a sewer?" And then we have the times. I remember talking to Paul and I were talking about this a couple of days ago. About a practice that I've gotten into, and Paul said he would gotten into too, is having a few single dollars stuck in the little compartment in the car where you can just pull one out easily, you know, when someone's standing on the side of the street. And he was talking about this woman that he gave a dollar or a couple of dollars to, and you know how torn up and decrepit, and you know she could have been 30 years old, but she looks about 90. And we talked about that in a class we were having on Tuesday evening, and what I recalled was, first of all, I thanked her in my heart for showing up, because she was such a gift to us that night. And I kind of wondered whether, you know, she just showed up in order to be able to do that. Because I don't know. Right? But I remembered what, when Paul got knocked off, not this Paul, but the other, the Apostle Paul got knocked off his horse on the way to Damascus. You know, and Jesus said, well, the voice of the Christ said, "Saul, Saul, why dost thou persecute me?" And he said, "When did I ever do that?" And he said, "Whenever you have done it to one of these least of my brethren, you've done it to me." So that was repeated again, you know, when did I ever see you hungry? When did I ever see you lonely? When did I ever see you hurt? When did I ever see you wounded? When did I ever see you homeless? I said, "I'm all around you." And so, thank you so much for that, Matt, because I mean, I haven't stood outside ringing the bell, but I see myself doing this a lot. Of just judgment after judgment after judgment after judgment about body types, about this, about that, judgment after judgment, judgment. And I just have to say, stop. Now, my mind is probably going to continue to do that. Right? But I can also start feeding a deeper part of my soul or a deeper part of my awareness. The Ho'oponopono part, okay, that says, you know, "I love you. Please forgive me." And can continue with that, and that becomes such a, that has become for me such a mantra as soon as I find myself getting into judgment. I start saying that in my mind. And it gives me the opportunity to let go of all of those externals that have grabbed me, that continue to grab me sometimes, and allow the energy of that transformation to take place. Because instead of judging that person, I am now connected with them. I'm not just giving you a dollar. I'm connected with you. You're my sister. You're my brother. Because who knows how many other lifetimes I've been standing on the other side of that mirror. I don't know. I mean, years ago I used to debate, well, they're probably just going to get a drink with that dollar I give. So what? It's none of my business. Maybe that's exactly what they need at that particular moment. Maybe that's going to be their last one. I don't know that. Maybe that's going to be the one that turns the corner. I gave them a dollar to buy a drink that turned the corner for them. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. We can go to the next question, or we can do a meditation. Let's do a short meditation, okay? So we'll begin with that next question of what is next for me? What's next for you is the next right thing. What guarantees do I have? You are guaranteed that you are unconditionally loved, no matter what. That's what you're guaranteed. You're guaranteed that everything's going to be okay. What if I die? What if I drop my body? You're perfectly safe. It's like taking off a shoe that's too tight. So let's take a moment to close our eyes, take a couple of breaths. God, I love you guys. Thank you. Deep breath. And let's begin with gratitude. Not only what we have to be grateful for, but just simply letting our hearts be open with a sense of gratitude. And however you experience that sense of gratitude for yourself, to imagine or feel or sense what it would be like to breathe into that energy, that vibration. I'm breathing into that sense of gratitude. And I'm letting it expand. I'm letting it stretch. And what would it be like to realize that there is nothing that can happen to me today that can take that away? There is nothing that can happen to me today that can take that away. And then when you're ready to, knowing that all of us in this space both contribute to and participate in your gratefulness, and there is not another living being that is not touched by this, no matter how far away they might seem. They are here, with you, with me. May all beings be at peace, and may all beings be free of suffering. Could I get a quick count of